Okay, so I've now got onto the back of the sulky. Thomas, you're coming with me, aren't you?
I am.
Come on, don't leave me on my... Oh, genie God.
Hold on there.
I'm holding on. Jump up there now. Okay, so we're now
easy,
on the...
Easy enough, light.
Okay, we're picking up a bit of speed. We're going out on the estate.
Lovely day for a big summer's day for Jay. Lovely day.
What's the thrill of it, or what's the beauty of it, or how?
To be honest, my father done it for years. His father done it. It's just a tradition, basically. It's just like cyclists loves their cycling. People loves running. People loves swimming. We just loved it. This is everything for me. Just to yoke up this pony today and go out for a swim with yourself, Damien. It means a lot.
She slows down going over the speed bumps and everything.
Oh, she's well used to it, yeah.
And have you raced her now a few times?
No, I never raced her, to be honest. As I said, she's not for a racing, basically. She's only for, basically, my own majority of a satisfaction, like.
Does she ever get spooked on the roads?
Not really, like. Like, that's why I even open, I have everything open on her head. She can see everything, like. She have everything open, like, so there's not much can spook her.
And do you ever get cars beeping? There's a young lad waving there over there with the mammy. Do you ever get cars beeping at you and people shouting abuse at you?
Yeah, we get some people that don't understand what it is like. And some of these probably big posh lads that, oh, look at them travellers, look at them driving horses. Like, Jesus Christ, I prefer to be out driving horse than out driving the new car. Like, that's where we are. We prefer to be driving the horse than be driving the new car.
What do you do for a living? What do you do for a crust?
It depends on the dole, don't we?
But how do you manage, though?
The social welfare feeds us and feeds the horses.
And what about work? Would you ever do a bit of work?
I would if I could get it. If I could get someone to give me work, I'd do it. Being a traveller again, it's hard. They don't want to give travellers work and stuff. Just the one usual routine, over and over and over. Traveller this, traveller this, traveller that. Look, we're just getting used to it now, to be honest.
So, what speed are we going now, would you say?
We're doing about 20 miles an hour. So.
Okay, so we're out on the main road.
We get out the countryside now and she'll relax better. Another man there, what he's horse.
What's his name?
That's me buddy Pierce.
Hello,
great,
Pierce.
Great friend of mine.
So what happens? Traffic is building up now behind us.
Traffic is building up behind us, ready? So we'll wave him on. We'll get into the bike lane and wave him on.
What about cyclists? Do you ever have...
We never had no problem with cyclists, no. Like, he gets a lot of beeping and abuse at times as well, I'd say. For being holding up traffic and stuff, so... I think we're nearly on the one page together. Do you ever see that?
And how often do you have to re-hoof her?
I just got her done now 2 days ago, so hopefully now probably every couple of weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, like.
So we're going around the back roads here, Thomas, picking up a bit of speed up and down hills. Accidents?
No accidents yet, no.
Thank God.
And not planning to have any either.
You have your feet positioned there in such a way.
Yeah, that's where you have full control over the horses. You have to have your feet in a position like where you have full control, just in case they ever got spooked and stuff like that. There you had the full control over them.
And if a horse gets spooked, like, it could literally buck and the sulky could go back.
It's not basically about that. It's you have to have your full focus all times on them. Like, if they got spooked, like them men working in the field, if they got spooked from that tractor, they're probably trying to get worked up, so you have to work them back down fast and react fast with them. So it's a full mind game, basically. When you're out on a horse, you have to keep full focus and stuff.
What is the youngest a young lad or a young traveller girl would be up on a sulky? Like, would you have an 8 or a 9-year-old, maybe?
We don't like seeing young ones around with horses because... It's not anyone's job we see. But as we are speaking, we would like to see a young lad about 12 or 13, but an average 12 or 13 lad, like a lad know what he's doing. Because as I said, it is a lot of responsibility. You're taking a lot of control in your hands with other road users and stuff.
Some people would say sulky racing is not part of travelling culture. What would you have to say to that?
Look, if I had my father near hand, he would be a great man to speak to you about these kind of things, be a lot older. As far as I can remember back, see photos of my grandparents and my great-grandparents, I never see my grandparents or my great-grandparents with cars or anything like this. All I ever seen in pictures was horses with these horse-drawn wagons and stuff. Like, there was the only transport that they had, like, years ago, was with their wagons and their horses. Like these, now these days, if we want to go to a shop, we get in a car, we go to a shop. How do people make out that travellers don't have horses in their culture? Trotting horses is every traveller man's dream.
So we're coming onto the ring road here. A lot of cars around, slowing her down. And back to the house. What do you have to say to your fellow travellers that do wrong, that don't treat horses right?
It's a very rare travellers that do treat horses bad. I'm around all the sites in Waterford City, and there's no one you see treating horses bad. But any man that do treat a horse bad, if you can't look after them, get rid of them.
And would you pull them up in it? Like, would you say to
I'd often say, like, Jesus, that horse is looking rough. Like, you want to look after him and yeah. get him a dose, or get him this, or get him that. Well, like, it could be conditions that some people get horses in, and they're only trying to get them better herself.
Okay, so just getting off the sulky here now, and we've been out for, I suppose, 20-25 minutes.
We're just back now after about 6 mile jog with her, and we're just gonna unyoke her now. We'll give her a fast wash down
and give her a bit of food.
It's just like herself coming out of the gym. We like our old shower and
Thomas, thanks very much.
Damon, thank you.
Well, sulky racing to me should not exist on roadways under any circumstances. I mean, there were quite a few points that the guy brought up. It is not a culture of the travellers, and I've done my research. The culture of the travellers was the hairy, solid, big, fat cob that their wagons were attached to, that live quite well with limited feed and limited conditions because they have reserves. The trotters that we're seeing now are little things like thoroughbreds that are being hammered around on the roads, and no matter where you go, it would be totally unacceptable.
John Hearn, Sinn Féin councillor, former mayor of Waterford, what do you think?
Well, the same. We looked at this on the special policy committee and how to get it off the road. So we asked all the experts to send in what they thought of it, and all the experts said it's cruel to run horses on the road. So it's not only, it's an animal rights issue. A cruelty straight away should stop it. Then it's child protection, that should stop it, because it a thing, and then it's traffic safety, and that those. So there's three direct reasons why it shouldn't be on the road.
Well, let's take those three things. Animal cruelty. Now, Thomas O'Reilly says he looks after his horse 100% perfectly. It's well fed, it's well watered, it's well bedded, and he has it checked out regularly by a vet chap. Yeah. What do you have to say about the cruelty issue, Barbara?
Well, you see, individual cases do not prove the
correct,
you know, the facts that are out there. In Waterford, in County Waterford alone, our inspector has taken 3 yearling sulky ponies. 2 were tied to telegraph poles, standing in mud, actually eating mud. They had all the scars of a trotter. They had cuts above their knees, they had swollen knees, they had marks from their harness on them, and they were totally emaciated. We had to put down one of them, it was so bad. So they're the facts of the sulky ponies. Huge numbers of young horses are driven under sulkies around Waterford.
And there's nothing to indicate any way whatsoever that Thomas O'Reilly or anybody connected with him is...
We're
talking in general here.
Thomas' scenario sounds idyllic. He loves his horse, he's a single horse, and that's it, you know.
But one case does not make facts.
2 years back now, Sunday the 5th of May 2002, we were out for a Sunday spin up by the lakes of Ballyscanlan, and there was a line of traffic because there was a lot of traffic going slow. The road had just been resurfaced. So just we came to one of the bad bends, 6 sulkies in a van came on the corner. One of the sulkies went over the car. It got trapped in the car, actually, initially. They all took off. They left us there. And my wife, my 2 kids were trapped in the car, and myself. I managed to get out of the car. Tried to hold this horse on the ground. I had no phone. I left my phone at home because being a Sunday, you know, didn't need it.
Yeah.
Only some passersby started giving me a hand, but I got kicked around a bit anyway, a bit assaulted out there. He got the sulky up and took off. I followed him back to the halting site in another car. A person was passing, so I jumped in and we'd follow him. Phone 999, told him what happened. They sent the cops out to the scene and the ambulance. I followed him back into the halting site, went in after him on my own. Pure temper and time at first, and look, unfortunately. But when I got there, the 2 guards that seen him go in, they just got there before me and they were dragging him out. But the long and short of the story is, there's no insurance. They have no insurance for this. So they were having a race. There were 6 of them involved in the race. They have no insurance. I had a claim for my own insurance, and when the guards came back to me a few days later, said, "We're not taking to court, Tony, because if you go to court, they'll burn your house down."
Seriously?
That was the end of it.
Wow. That's what the guards actually told you?
They told me that up front, yeah.
And how much did it cost? I presume you lost your no-claims bonus. And was the car a write-off and everything?
The car was €8,000 worth of a car, but there was €4,000 owed on it. So the insurance paid out the €4,000 and gave us back €4,000 then. And that was it.
Just, I think it's a really unique sport in that there's a high psychological and physiological demand on them. Making weight is also a big issue. So there's a really complex interplay between making weight and kind of the psychological effects of that, and obviously the physiological effects of that. But that affects people's mood. It affects, obviously, their bone health. Sarah Jane will tell you more about that. But it's quite a complex sport that way. And the demands and the actual lifestyle of the sport in that they're riding out in the morning and then could be racing again in the afternoon.
I don't know how they do it.
It's incredibly demanding.
And then every time they get up on the horse and they're racing and they're jumping, they think, this could be the day that my career might end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a real... What have you found so far, Sarah Jane?
We often say that about the jockeys. It's not like that you go out and play a match and you have a friendly. Like every race that they go out and ride in, you know, they have these pressures, not just from trainers and owners, but like the social media pressure. All the eyes are on them, you know. So each race is so important. So there are those like pressures on them, aren't there?
Yeah, and I think it's about balance. Like really for the jockeys, it's balancing the risk with the reward. And really sometimes if the risks outweigh the rewards, that they're kind of susceptible to mental health issues. But it's probably the only sport where you lose 98% of the time. You know, it's, if you're a junior B hurling, you'd have probably more success than that as well. You know, so it's managing. You know, and it's also, again, it's quite a high masculine kind of macho type sport as well. It's even though it is males and females compete.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that next, in terms of there are more women doing it now. Have you found so far a different way that they're dealing with mental health issues, Sarah Jane, or do the same things apply?
Well, we don't have, like, the females are coming through, and it's more probably because of the weights. They can make the weights easier. So I suppose a lot of the research we've done has been predominantly focused on males, because it's very hard, you know, to just focus on one or two.
Of course.
In terms of case studies, Kira, you'll probably be in terms
of... Yeah, and I work with a lot of the female jockeys as well. I suppose they're still humans, they're still athletes, they still present with the same issues that maybe... The males do as well. I would say in general, but you know, sport is a microcosm of a wider society. The females are a little bit more open to engaging with support services and particularly psychological support services.
But in terms of spending and in terms of the buzz that's there and people coming in and people coming from abroad, there'll be obviously a few bans and stuff like that that are cancelling as well.
I think it's going to be interesting to see as well, because at the end of the day, the parade itself isn't actually a moneymaker. It is, you know, the thing that brings people in. But it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, I've been watching the comments coming in online since we cancelled it, and people saying, well, are you going to close the pubs and the restaurants as well? Obviously, that's not, you know, here nor there, but it'll be interesting to see if the parade not being on has an effect, if people are still out for the day itself, if they still go out for a meal. And you know what, I've been looking and seeing a lot of people online saying, make sure that, you know, you're very smart about it, washing your hands, taking the precautions. But you know, we're going to be seeing the knock-on effect to small businesses, the restaurants, the pubs, all this kind of thing. So I think it'll be interesting to watch next week how, you know,
I think it's an interesting point that you bring up.
How Ireland responds.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point you bring up, because like Dara's company, Every Event, and our one, Spree, are small enterprises, small local enterprises, but a lot of other small local enterprises are going to be caught up in this as well. Yeah. And the truth is, if you go to Dublin of a normal Tuesday, the restaurants are fairly busy and the pubs are fairly full, and they would still be fairly full and fairly busy on Patrick's Day. That's why I can understand why Waterford Council hung on to as long as possible until they were forced into a situation to cancel, because it's their ratepayers are going to be affected by it. The hotels, the restaurants, the bars, and the convenience shops as well, because I mean, lots of people come to town, they'll buy a bar of chocolate or they'll buy an ice cream and stuff like that. I think longer term, I think we'll get over Patrick's Day. The really scary thing for me, Damien, is what happens next, because this is going to play out over quite a period of time, and what damage is going to be done to local economies like Waterford's in the meantime?
Well, economies across the world. It's not just, this is the one thing I suppose that maybe equalizes it in some respect, that it's affecting all economies. And we're talking about, and if there is a slowdown, now if the fundamentals of economies are correct, you will see a bounce back at some stage, whether it lasts 3 weeks or 3 months or a year. Were they right, Dara Jane, to cancel the parade?
I think so. It's like TV said, it's not an easy thing. And you want to do this because you want to, you know, celebrate the National Day and being Irish. But I think in the circumstances, it's absolutely the right call. You can't. There comes a point where the safety of the public is.
And
TV, do you think they were right to cancel the parade around the
country? For example, we had a conversation with our colleagues at Cork City Council last Friday afternoon. They hadn't cancelled at the time, but they were heading into that zone. And one of the things they were particularly facing in Cork is that they were operating in a city with live cases in their local hospital. And I think there was beginning to be a perception problem as well as a health problem arising at that time. What would it look like if the staff of Cork University Hospital were slaving it out and slogging it out with live cases on their wards and there was a party in town? And I think the way things are developing, the Every Event team and the Waterford Council team would have been facing similar questions here in Waterford.
Global epidemics affecting people are always really from where a virus has made a jump from one species to humans. So most viruses are species specific. Viruses that affect cats don't affect us. Viruses that affect dogs don't affect cats. So viruses usually are species specific. And where you get problems like the coronavirus is where a virus mutates slightly. So this virus is normally in bats, found in bats. And bats are host for big numbers of viruses because they've these really powerful immune systems. So they seem to be able to carry viruses and bacteria, for a long time without being affected by them. So they're a big reservoir of viruses. Which normally just circulate within the bat population and don't affect us. But this virus mutated slightly and made that jump into people.
Yeah, they were talking about, obviously we're talking about Wuhan and this idea of live pets and dead pets being side by side and some possible way. They're not still 100% sure how the mutation happened.
The mutations happen. They happen all the time. I suppose the danger is that if your mutation happens normally, if that mutation had happened and the bats were living in a cave, well, the mutation would have died out because there weren't any people for it to live on. The problem is where you've got different species like humans and other animals, and seems to be particularly bats, in very close proximity. And if the virus does happen to mutate, which happens all the time, they mutate randomly, and then it's able to make that jump into a person and starts to replicate in the person, and then you get person to person transmission. And that's how global epidemics, that's where all disease comes from.
George Hamilton, ole, ole, ole.
Ole, ole, ole to you, Damien, too. Good morning,
buongiorno. Buongiorno, buongiorno. Thanks so much for talking to us this morning. You're a lot welcome. Of people, I know the ratings were sky high last night watching the Boys in Green, and it's going to be on the second part next year, next Monday night. The memories that it stirs, even looking back 30 years now, George, like, can you believe at first that it's 30 years ago?
I can't. No, I can't. And how that comes home to me, Damien, is when I might be talking to somebody about it and we're reminiscing about this and that and the other, and then whoever I'm talking to, and I'm thinking in particular of one journalist, David Snaid, he said to me, you know, I wasn't born then. And suddenly we have this guy who's reporting on the Irish team now, who's a wealth of experience in terms of reporting on both domestic and international soccer. And here he is. He wasn't even around. He told a lovely story about how his dad missed out on Euro 88 because his mum was expecting him and the event was to happen during the tournament. And unfortunately, poor old dad didn't get to go.
You are a renowned commentator. I know you're doing the Leipzig-Tottenham match tonight as well. One of your, I suppose, the iconic moments, and you described it last night, let the nation holds its breath. Had you planned that? Had you sort of considered what if something happens? Or because that phrase, I know the way you said it, you knew everybody was watching, but for that phrase to come out of your mouth at that time, it was phenomenal, George. I mean this genuinely. It was just one of those phrases.
Well, you're very kind, but the only way I can describe it, and let's start at the beginning. I am a full total believer in spontaneity. in the area of commentary. There's no point in scripting things because you just cannot know in advance what is going to happen.